إن الله يدخل الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار يحلون فيها من أساور من ذهب ولؤلؤا ولباسهم فيها حرير.
On the other hand, Allah will cause those who believed and acted righteously to enter the gardens beneath which rivers flow. They shall be decked in them with bracelets of gold and pearls, and their raiment shall be of silk. On the other hand, Allah will cause those who believed and acted righteously to enter the gardens beneath which rivers flow. They shall be decked in them with bracelets of gold. What is meant by this is that the believers will be made to don royal dress. At the time the Quran was revealed, kings and nobles wore jewelry of gold and precious stones. Such custom is in vogue even in our own time among the petty rulers, the Nawabs and Rajas of India.
وَهُدُوا إِلَى الطَّيِّبِ مِنَ الْقَوْلِ وَهُدُوا إِلَى صِرَاطِ الْحَمِيدِ.
They were guided to accept the pure word. They were guided to the way of the praiseworthy Lord. They were guided to accept the pure word.
Although the expression used here connotes a general significance, it refers in fact to that true statement and sound creed whose acceptance made them believers. This consisted of affirming that there is no God other than Allah and that Muhammad is His messenger.
They were guided to the way of the praiseworthy Lord.
As we have stated in the introduction to this surah, in our opinion, this verse concludes that part of the surah which was revealed during the Meccan period. The content and style of the verses up until the present one are those of the Meccan surahs. To put it differently, there is nothing in these verses to suggest that this part of the surah was revealed either wholly or partially in Medina. Some commentators, however, believe that verse 19 of this surah belongs to the Medinan period. This view is based on the assumption that the two disputing parties mentioned refer to those who fought against each other in the Battle of Badr. This assumption, however, does not hold much water. The context does not indicate that the particular battle referred to is the Battle of Badr. Instead, the statement is couched in quite general terms. Commentators also seem to indicate that a reference is made here to the perennial dispute between belief and unbelief from the very beginning of time, a dispute which will last till the Day of Judgment. However, had there been any connection between this verse and the Battle of Badr, it would have been located in Surah Al-Anfal rather than in the present surah, or in this particular context. If one accepts such a line of argument, it implies that the verses revealed subsequently were placed quite arbitrarily according to the whims of people and without any regard for textual coherence. On the contrary, we find a highly cohesive order in the Quran, something which is in itself emphatic refutation of such an argument.
إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَيَصُدُّونَ عَن سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ الَّذِي جَعَلْنَاهُ لِلنَّاسِ وَالْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ الَّذِي جَعَلْنَاهُ لِلنَّاسِ سَوَاءً الْعَاكِفُ فِيهِ وَالْبَادِ وَمَنْ يُرِدْ فِيهِ بِإِلْحَادٍ بِظُلْمٍ نُذِقُهُ مِنْ عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ.
Indeed, those who disbelieve and who now hinder people from the way of Allah and from the holy mosque, which we have set up as a place of worship for all people, equally for those who dwell therein and for those who come from outside, they surely deserve punishment. Whosoever deviates in the holy mosque from the right way and acts with iniquity, we shall cause him to taste a painful chastisement. Indeed, those who disbelieve.
This refers to those who rejected outright the message of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. What follows makes it evident that the reference here is to the unbelievers of Mecca.
And who now hinder,
that is, they prevent the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his companions from performing Hajj and Umrah.
People from the way of Allah and from the holy mosque, which we have set up as a place of worship for all people, equally for those who dwell therein and for those who come from outside, they surely deserve punishment.
The holy mosque is not the property of any individual, family, or tribe. It is meant instead for everyone, and hence no one can bar others from visiting it. This gave rise to two legal questions regarding which Muslim jurists have disagreed. First, whether the expression holy mosque stands for the mosque itself or for the sacred precincts of Mecca. Second, what is meant by the statement that those who dwell therein and those who come from outside enjoy equal rights over it. Some scholars are of the opinion that the verse refers only to the mosque and not to the entire area covered by the term haram. This seems to be indicated by the apparent meaning of the words used here. As for the equality of rights, what is meant is equality in the right of worship. In this respect, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, "Descendants of Abd Manaf, those of you who are placed in authority over the affairs of men shall not prohibit anyone from performing tawaf or praying for a while in it whenever he likes, be it in day or night." Hence, exponents of this opinion contend that it is wrong to think that the Quran speaks here of the whole area or Mecca. Nor is it legitimate to think that this verse declares that Meccans and outsiders are entitled to the same rights in all respects. They point out by way of evidence that from pre-Islamic times, the land in Mecca was considered to be the property of its inhabitants, which they could inherit, buy, sell, or lease, and these rights continued to be recognized even after the advent of Islam. This is evident, for instance, from the purchase of Safwan ibn Umayyah's house for 4,000 dirhams during Umar ibn al-Khattab's caliphate, so as to transform it into a prison house. Hence, what equality means is simply equality in the right to worship. This, then, is the opinion of Imam Shafi, as also of some other scholars. Another group, however, is of the opinion that the expression holy mosque here stands for the whole sacred area of Mecca. The first argument advanced in support of this opinion is that the specific act of the Meccan polytheists, for which they are here reproached, is in barring the Muslims from Hajj. It is also significant that this act is denounced on the grounds that all have equal rights there. Now, it is quite evident that the performance of Hajj rites is not confined to the Holy Mosque. Instead, its rituals are performed at several places, such as Safa, Marwa, Muzdalfa, and Arafat. Moreover, the Quran frequently employs the expression Holy Mosque to denote the sacred precincts of Mecca rather than in the narrow sense of the Holy Mosque of Mecca. There are several examples of this in the Quran. Barring people from the way of Allah and denying entry into the holy mosque and expelling its inmates from it are more awesome acts in the sight of Allah. Al-Baqarah 2:17. This privilege is for those whose families do not live near the holy mosque. Al-Baqarah 2:196. In these verses, the expression Holy Mosque quite evidently denotes the sacred precincts of Mecca rather than the mosque itself. Hence, the equality mentioned in the above verse cannot be limited to the mosque itself. Rather, it embraces the entire precincts. Furthermore, this group of scholars does not limit equality to matters pertaining to worship or to acts relating to sanctity and reverence. They rather contend that within the area of the haram, there should be equality in other respects as well. There are also of the opinion that the land of Mecca falls into the category of common waqf, i.e. endowment on behalf of God. Hence, none has any property rights over its land or its buildings. Anyone can stay wherever he likes. No one has the right to stop anyone from staying wherever he wants. Nor can anyone be evicted from the place where he is staying. These scholars marshal a number of traditions in support of this view. For instance, they adduce a hadith narrated by Abdullah ibn Umar to the effect that the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "Makkah is a site for pilgrims. Its land may not be sold, nor its buildings rented." Ibrahim al-Nakhai also narrates a Mursal tradition from the Prophet. "Allah has made Makkah a sacred territory. It is unlawful to sell its land or to receive rent on its houses." It may be pertinent to point out that the Mursal traditions of Ibrahim al-Nakhai are rated as marfu. This in view of his well-known practice of narrating a Mursal tradition, which was in fact a tradition transmitted by Abdullah ibn Masud. Alqama ibn Nadla also reported that in the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and of Abu Bakr and Umar ibn al-Khattab, the land of Makkah was treated as sawab, that is, land on which a person might live as long as he needed to, and pass it on to others when he did not. Abdullah ibn Umar reports that Umar even issued the order that no Meccan may close his door during the days of Hajj. In fact, Mujahid reports that Umar directed the residents of Mecca to keep the courtyards to their houses open. He asked them to have no door to their courtyards so that a pilgrim might stay wherever he wished. The same tradition is reported by Atta, who adds that the only exception that was made was in respect of Suhail ibn Amr, who, because of his trading requirements, needed to keep his camels in an enclosure. He was therefore allowed to have a door in his courtyard. Abdullah ibn Umar says that he who receives rent on his houses in Makkah fills his belly with fire. The same opinion is held by Abdullah ibn Abbas, who says that Allah sanctified the precincts of Makkah into a mosque where all have equal rights. He was of the opinion that the people of Makkah had no right to receive any rent from outsiders. In the same vein, Umar ibn Abdulaziz issued the directive to the governor of Makkah that no one may receive rent on houses in Makkah. In view of these traditions, the majority of successors subscribe to the above-mentioned opinion. Among the leading jurists of that age, Malik, Abu Hanifa, Sufyan al-Thawri, Ahmed ibn Hanbal, and Ishaq ibn Rahawiya are of the opinion that the sale of Meccan land and the renting out of houses there, at least during the Hajj season, are not lawful. Most jurists concede, however, the right to property in the houses of Mecca and, accordingly, consider it permissible to rent out houses even though they may not rent out land. This viewpoint seems closer to the spirit of the Quran, the Sunnah, and the practice of the rightly guided caliphs. For God did not prescribe Hajj as an obligatory duty on Muslims around the world in order to provide a source of income to the residents of Mecca, nor in order to provide them with an opportunity to fleece pilgrims by charging exorbitant rents. Mecca is to be treated as a common endowment for the benefit of all believers. No one has proprietary rights over it. Every pilgrim has the right to stay on any spot that he finds available.
Whosoever deviates in the holy mosque from the right way and acts with iniquity.
Zulm does not signify a specific act, but rather embraces all acts that do not conform with righteousness and share the attribute of wrongdoing. Such acts are sinful regardless of the place where they are committed. However, to commit them within the sacred precincts of the Haram is all the more iniquitous. Commentators, for example, are of the opinion that if someone swears without there being any legitimate reason for this in the precincts of the Haram, then it amounts to blaspheming the Haram, and so the present verse applies to such a person. Apart from ordinary sins, there are certain acts which violate the sanctity of the Haram quite directly and blatantly on the grounds of this verse. The following represents some instances of violating the sanctity of the Haram. If someone who commits a homicide outside the sacred precincts or commits any other crime which entails a had punishment and seeks refuge in the sacred precincts, no action will be taken against him as long as he stays there. The Haram is considered to have enjoyed this immunity since the time of the Prophet Abraham, peace be upon him. The only exception being made quite temporarily was on the day of the conquest of Mecca, after which the age-old inviolability of Mecca was restored. The Quran says that whoever enters it becomes secure. Al-Imran 3:97. Statements from each of the following companions, Umar ibn al-Khattab, Abdullah ibn Umar, and Abdullah ibn Abbas, have authentically been reported to the effect that even if offspring were to get hold of those who had killed their father, they still could not touch them as long as they remained in the precincts of Mecca. Accordingly, a majority of successors and Hanafi, Hanbali, and Ahli al-Hadith scholars are of the opinion that qisas cannot be meted out in the Haram area for crimes committed outside it. Fighting and bloodshed have also been forbidden within the sacred precincts. The Prophet, peace be upon him, prohibited it in his address on the day following the conquest of Mecca, declaring, "O people, God has sanctified Mecca from the very beginning, and it will remain so till the last day. It is forbidden for anyone who believes in God and the last day to shed blood within its precincts." Then he added, "If someone were to cite this fighting of mine to legitimize the shedding of blood within the sacred precincts, let him know that God has made it especially lawful for his messenger, and even so for a certain hour on a certain day, after which its sanctity is restored as it was ever in the past. Such is the sanctity of Mecca, that its self-grown trees may not be felled, and its self-grown grass may not be uprooted, nor may any birds and animals be hunted in Mecca, nor may any animals be driven away from Mecca for the purposes of game outside its precincts. The only exception in this regard are snakes, scorpions, and other harmful animals, which may be killed even in the sacred precincts. Exception has also been made with regard to wild grass, there being explicit injunctions on all these matters in the collections of hadith. It is a part of the inviolability of the haram that one may not pick up in the haram articles that have been dropped by others. According to a tradition of Abu Daud, the Prophet, peace be upon him, forbade people to pick up the articles dropped by pilgrims. Likewise, whoever visits the sacred area for the purpose of Hajj or Umrah may not enter without ihram. There is, however, some difference of opinion among jurists about whether it is obligatory for all persons who enter the sacred area to observe ihram, even if their purposes be for other than pilgrimage. Abdullah ibn Abbas believes that no one may enter the sacred area without ihram, regardless of the purpose of his visit. A statement to this effect is attributed to both Ahmad ibn Hanbal and Shafi. There is, however, an opinion regarding those who frequent the Haram in connection with their occupation to the effect that such people are exempt from the requirements of Ihram. This is the opinion of Ahmad ibn Hanbal and Shafi. There is another opinion, however, that anyone who lives within the Miqat may enter Mecca without Ihram. However, those living outside the Miqat may not do so. This position is held by Abu Hanifa.